Hi, everybody. This is Jerry Procaccini with the 5-H Show. And I actually have a guest today that I'll talk about in a minute. She's running a little late. I just got an email from her that she hit an accident. She's coming from northern Vermont. I forget exactly where. But she'll be here shortly. So meanwhile, what I'm going to do is, first of all, tell you who she is. Before I do that, I'm going to tell you that we have a sponsor for the show today. Super Simple Foods, offering homemade soups and fresh bread daily. You can find Super Simple Foods at the Mad River Car Wash, 124 Fiddler's Green, Waitsfield, Vermont, Wednesday through Saturday, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. So they're open. And we appreciate all our underwriters, and we certainly appreciate you, our listeners. So my guest actually just walked in the door. I'll have to hear about your accident once you get seated and settled. Her name's Charlotte Danette, and this is actually part two of our interview. And in part one, I think we discussed a lot about your past and how you got involved with Lebanon. You were a journalist there, and we went into a lot of that, I think. And so welcome.
I can't believe we made it.
What happened?
Well, there was just a major accident on Route 89. It doesn't happen that often, but there were a couple of cars off the road, so that held us up.
Yeah. And you're here with your husband?
She's my friend.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. She's my friend Judith I knew in my Beirut days, so we've continued the friendship. She's visiting.
Well, nice to meet you, Judith.
Yes, thank you.
And thanks so much for coming in. I know it was a bit of a hike.
Well, I was wondering why you wanted me here. And, I mean, obviously, it's a beautiful drive. I'm a little worried because I have an electric car.
Oh.
But we'll deal with that later.
Yeah.
If I can plug it in someone here, because it took longer than I thought.
We do have a charging station.
There's one
right in the parking lot. In fact, if you want to, would you like to do that now, and I'll give a little brief bio on you?
That would be fine. I don't know if it'll take my car, though. Will it take my car?
I don't know. I don't have an electric car, so I've never...
We can deal with it later.
Okay.
We'll hang out here.
Yeah. Okay, that sounds good.
Yeah.
One thing I am going to do is close that door, because there's background... Yeah, that would be great if you can just hook it. And,
Well, this is a very cool place.
Yeah. It's so... I remember the first time I came in here and just went, wow, this is a really cool place.
Very Vermont-y and beautiful setting and community-oriented. I like it.
For anybody who hasn't seen the station, come in and visit sometime, because it really is interesting. And our manager, John Barkhausen, keeps us up and running. I don't know how he does, but he does.
Good. Excellent.
So,
well, I'm really happy to be on the show and to talk to Vermonters, because it's really funny. I live here, and yet I'm not that well-known in Vermont for some reason. And so I'm delighted to be on your show.
That surprised me last time when you said that. And then I think I told you I went around to 3 or 4 bookstores trying to find your book and couldn't.
Yeah.
And so you were kind enough to send me a copy.
Right. You can get it off of Amazon is the easiest way. I hate to say it.
Yeah.
That's what my publisher, Chelsea Green, prefers people to get it off of Amazon.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she prefers it because they don't do returns, and they will order sort of in bulk once they run out of books. So that's the way the publisher likes it. And so,
gosh.
Whatever. Huh. But you can also order it through Chelsea Green.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's where this came from, that you got me. But anyway, let me just say who you are in case people missed the last part one. Charlotte's an attorney and an investigative journalist whose most recent book, Follow the Pipelines, explores the possible causes of a plane crash that killed her father, a CIA agent who was flying from Saudi Arabia to Ethiopia in 1947, correct?
Correct. With one little correction, he actually was not in the CIA. He died about 3 months before the CIA was formed, so he was with the Central Intelligence Group.
Okay.
That was the immediate, and that was an outgrowth of the OSS, the Office of Strategic Services, which was America's first wartime intelligence organization.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they just sort of graduated one to the other, right?
They graduated one to another, and interestingly enough, The CIA honors its fallen, people who died in their course of their service, and they have this ceremony at Langley, Virginia. And there's a wall, it's called the Wall of Honor. And when you go in, you'll see all these stars on the wall. Mm-hmm. And my father got recognized as the first star. It's interesting. We could go into it, but I was actually invited to the ceremony. My whole family was. They honored us. Yeah. They gave me a private audience with the director, who was then Gina Haspel. Some may call her, what did they call her, Bloody Gina? They thought she was involved in torturing people. I actually did not know this history at the time. But she was very nice to me, and the first woman.
You didn't get tortured during the ceremony.
No, and she actually declassified a major document that had been heavily redacted. I got her to declassify, and we can talk about it because it is very insightful.
Okay.
You want to talk about it?
Sure. I usually make up a bunch of questions, and we usually only get through half of them because we go off on tangents. So we can start with the tangent. And what I did with you, because I just finished reading your book, was I just marked different sections that I thought would be interesting that we could discuss.
Sure.
But if you want to start with that, go ahead.
Well, okay. It's called Analysis of Work. I got this because I sued the CIA. And I finally got this document and many other documents. And it was written by my father. And it was written around 1944. And it was basically his sort of regurgitating his marching orders, called Analysis of Work. And so what he does, it's about a 6-page document, he lays out what is he expected to do? What are the challenges he's going to confront? Who is he going to be spying on? Because he was in counterintelligence, which means spy chasing. It means it's going to protect the Central Intelligence Group from penetration, and he'll try to penetrate, you know, the bad guys. Mm-hmm. So in this document, right up at the top, what are the major issues confronting America? And what he says, the oil of Saudi Arabia is so crucial. We must protect it at all costs.
And this line
had escaped the redactor's pen when the thing was heavily redacted, so I already had a lead when I first got this document. Then I got the whole thing declassified. It's really fascinating. And
when you say the whole thing declassified, including the redactions?
Yeah, all of them. I see. She removed all of them.
Wow.
I have yet to put it up on a website. I probably should at some point. I always
refer to it. That would be interesting.
But and that's very major. In fact, it explains U.S. foreign policy in the Middle East from that time forward. I could even say it explains the policy going back to World War I. It's the oil. Everyone suspects it's oil, but it never gets discussed.
Yeah.
Come on, even today, do you hear anybody talking about the $500 billion worth of oil and natural gas deposits off the coast of Israel and Gaza? No, you never hear it. And why? Because oil continues to be the fuel of the military, of everyone's military. Yeah. Therefore, it has to be protected at all costs. It has to be protected by military. Go ahead.
I'm just wondering why you said you sued the CIA, so you put in an original request and they refused?
No, I put in a request. First, I went through the National Archives, where a lot of my father's papers have been declassified.
Yeah.
And from there, you can ask for the documents through them, and then when you don't get it through them, then you sue the CIA. And it's really only when, through FOIA, Freedom of Information, it's only when you sue them that they take you seriously.
It must have come in handy being an attorney.
At the time, I wasn't. I don't think, maybe I was an attorney. Yeah, I guess I was an attorney at the time, but, you know, anybody can do a FOIA. Really.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
You don't need an attorney for that.
I suspect that I got a little bit of special treatment because I was one of theirs. So, as a matter of fact, when they finally recognized my father, that's a whole other story, but when they did, Three of them came up to Vermont to meet me and obviously check me out. and that was an amazing experience as well. But at the end of that meeting, which was quite cordial, one of the assistant of the Near East Division, Dave Marlowe, very nice guy, said, "You're part of the family now." And they are always remind me that I'm part of the family. So I get invited every year to go down to the ceremony. I've only been to that one. It was in 2019. But it was quite a revelation.
You know, this
through the halls of the CIA and seeing all these people walking
around, oh, I bet.
Seeing their museum. And anyway, that's a whole side story you didn't anticipate.
No, I didn't. And I was going to leave this for the end of our interview, but I think I'm going to jump ahead. What is your opinion of the CIA?
Oh, my God. Now, you're the first person who ever asked. Well, first of all, I did some major investigations of the CIA.
Yeah.
My previous book with my husband, entitled Thy Will Be Done. We always have long titles. Thy Will Be Done, The Conquests of the Amazon, Nelson Rockefeller, and Evangelism in the Age of Oil. And that whole pursuit, which took us 18 years, was to investigate an American evangelical group that was penetrating Latin America under the guise of being linguists. They call themselves the Summer Institute of Linguistics. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of suspicion that these very sophisticated missionaries were backed by the CIA, and that they were helping major corporations penetrate the Amazon, whether it was for oil or agribusiness or ranching or lumber or whatever.
So the United Fruit activity in Guatemala, and
we weren't looking at United Fruit because that wasn't our focus, Central mm-hmm. America. Our focus was the Amazon, which encompasses not only Brazil, but part of Colombia, Bolivia, Peru. So, and we were able to find out that, yes, there was backing of the CIA. What is my opinion of the CIA? I thought it was the evil incarnate, quite frankly. We did a very, very heavy critical book.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting because when these CIA guys came up to visit us, they were saying, "We appreciate your work," not necessarily the earlier work, our Latin America work, but apparently they appreciated my investigation into my father's death, and probably it's because I was looking for who done it, who was responsible. And what I came upon was what I call the dead. This is in my subtitle, Follow the Pipeline.
Yeah.
It says, "Uncovering the Mystery of the Lost By and the Deadly Politics of the Great Game for Oil." And what I discovered is that all the major powers were competing against each other after World War II for oil. They were like the British and the Russians and the French. They were all intensely jealous and even angry over the fact that the United States had gotten this exclusive concession of Saudi oil, because it was a huge find. It was the richest find of petroleum in the world.
Yeah.
And protecting that oil is what catapulted the United States as not only a major power in the Middle East, but a major power in the world.
Yeah, and I gathered from reading your book that you surmise, I mean, I don't think there's any concrete evidence from what I gathered, but you think it was probably British brought the plane down?
Yeah,
you
discerned that.
I did.
Good for you.
Well,
okay, I will confess, I think the British are my top suspects, and the reason is because, first of all, they were, you know, very angry about the U.S. getting Saudi oil, and they kept trying to wrangle themselves in, but did not succeed. The other thing is...
And this is the mid-40s, because the accident was...
Well, the accident happened in March 47, so the war was over. Yeah. My father, in one of the declassified documents, predicted there would be, quote-unquote, a real free-for-all, you know.
Mm.
So he was headed to Ethiopia with five other top-level people in this little plane, and the purpose of the trip was to set up a... Ethiopian Airlines, which would be American controlled but Ethiopian owned.
Yeah.
And the British didn't like that one little bit because they had their own airlines and they had they controlled everything in Ethiopia. You know, they controlled the railways, they controlled the roads, they controlled the airspace. And so they were not at all happy about this. Yeah. And a man from TWA had made a flight that started in Asmara, which is Eritrea, right next to Ethiopia, and was headed to Addis Ababa, and that plane crashed.
Hmm.
And I couldn't find a whole lot of more information, but it was the identical route that this flight 3804 that my father was on took. And one of the things I found out was, what was on the plane? And I got the accident report, and I found out what was at the crash site, and there was an aerial camera, and there was a top secret data machine, and that helped to track traffic, and that was crashed to smithereens.
Mm-hmm.
So. The U.S. was trying to penetrate Ethiopia, and a lot of leads point to the British as being responsible. I can't totally prove it. And this is one thing about plane crashes. They're very effective because it's really hard to prove who done it.
Yeah, I always wondered about Paul Wellstone. I don't know if you remember.
Yeah, no, of course. I mean,
pretty suspicious there, wasn't it?
the U.N. guy.
Yeah.
There are many assassination by plane crash, very effective.
Yeah, because it's hard to prove.
But I was able to, in the book, I was able to, you know, talk about other suspects. The Soviets were intensely interested in Ethiopia as well. And then I got to say, the other thing is, coming back to pipelines, which we actually haven't discussed, my father's objective when he went to his last mission, which was to Saudi Arabia before he went to Ethiopia, mm-hmm. was to try to figure out the route of the Trans-Arabian pipeline that was going to take this Saudi oil to market. And there were several routes considered, and actually they appear on a map on the cover of my book, which is really useful to look at. And the projected route of the pipeline was that in this particular map, it was going to terminate in Lebanon. Another possibility was Haifa, Palestine. And when I saw that, I thought, wow, that's interesting. And so then I started to look at the geopolitical location of Israel, Lebanon, Syria. Well, they all border the Eastern Mediterranean.
Right.
And when I was in Lebanon, this was all called the gateway to the Middle East. But what I discovered, if you're an oil man, it was the gateway to Middle East oil, because a lot of the oil that came from Iraq and Saudi Arabia was by pipeline, and it terminated in the Eastern Mediterranean. So that whole area had to be protected at all costs. And that meant protected militarily. And what I ultimately figured out is that in the case of the Trans-Arabian pipeline, its major protector was Israel. That's why Israel
Surprise.
Is so heavily financed. Do you ever hear that in the news?
No. You never hear anything about any connection of Israel-Palestine to oil at all.
No.
In fact, your book is really the first that I've read that has any, you know, correlation and in-depth information about it. And, you know, one thing we didn't talk about last time that I'm interested in now because it's such a current event
sure.
is the Israeli Palestinian issue and Kennedy. And we didn't get to that last time.
Yeah.
But I thought I was starting, because when I read your book, you got into a CIA plot that Joseph Kennedy uncovered.
Yeah.
Do you remember any of the details about that?
Well, you'd have to read Robert Kennedy Jr.'s very interesting article, which I describe in the book. It was originally published, I believe, in Politico.
Yeah.
And I believe his title, I was going to look, but I think it was Why the Arabs Don't Want Us in Syria. I think that's the title. Maybe you've got it there. It's a fascinating story because he had a similar mission at a certain time in his life. He wanted to know more about Sirhan Sirhan, the person who allegedly killed his father,
right?
Who was a Palestinian. So he looked into it, and lo and behold, he ended up the same place I did, way back in 1947 in the Trans-Arabian Pipeline. He actually focused in on that and realized how important that was to U.S. foreign policy. And then he started to trace the CIA and all the efforts to control and destabilize the Arab countries. And he went through this whole thing. You've got to read the piece because it was amazing, and I thought it was very courageous of him to do it.
Yeah, that was in Politico, by the way.
Yeah.
I think you can pull it up online.
Right. And the thing is, when I've heard that he came out stating totally taking the Israeli line on the war in Gaza and saying that there was no genocide and accusing Hamas of genocide. Now, this is in a interview he did. I watched it. Somebody sent it to me.
It was probably me.
Well, it could have been you. Maybe it was you, but it could have been somebody else as well. And I mean, I found that deplorable.
Sent it to quite a few. Yeah.
Deplorable. And I think what Biden has done supporting Israel in the genocide in Gaza is deplorable. So what choices do we have for president? We've got a fascist, and we have a neoliberal imperialist. What choice do we have? It's going to be a hard one. I think, you know, Vermonters can vote whatever they will, because ultimately Biden will be the person that Vermont goes through. So if people want to, you know, vote for Jill Stein, they're not going to interfere in the actual tally in Vermont. But I may vote for her. I don't know. It's so hard for me to vote for Biden. But I will not support Robert Kennedy. I think he turned out to be an opportunist. You know, suddenly now he's saying he's for a two-state solution.
Yeah.
Whereas earlier he was blaming... It's saying Israel was not committing genocide. And you know, how are you going to have peace out of what they've done to the Palestinian people in Gaza is beyond me. Do they think they're going to really wipe them out?
Yeah.
Do they really think so? They don't think that they've just created a whole new generation of angry Palestinians that are going to want revenge? It's just, oh, my God, it's so upsetting.
I'm right there with you.
Do you agree with me or not?
Well, he broke my heart.
Robert.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because when he came out for Israel, especially after reading your book, it's even more totally baffling as to why.
Yeah, well, and I think it's opportunism. Or, you know, first of all, going against Israel is really difficult. Really. I mean... You know, APAC.
Yes, but everything he does is difficult. He's never backed down from. He didn't back down from the vaccines.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's just incredible. I think I've heard that he has some Zionist relatives somewhere or other. Somebody's done a piece on that, and I didn't refresh my memory, so I can't say. But there is some influence on him from Zionists, and either it's friends or it's relatives. And, you know, they have perfected their propaganda so amazingly over the years. My friend Judith is here, and we were talking about how we have suffered all our lives. I mean, being sidelined, being accused of being anti-Semitic because we were critical of Israel. And now, I mean, it's still happening, but these young people, it's just incredible.
I have felt the same way.
I never dreamed of the day of seeing campus exploding in demonstrations. Bravo. The tragedy is it took a genocide to do it, and that's the other tragedy.
Yeah. And I've been wondering what has made the press do a 180. I mean, they've been ignoring this for decades.
Yeah, well, I think it's because they had to. I mean, if you've got...
But what changed?
Television! We watched genocide from day one. I mean, yes, the October 7th raid was appalling. And I think we will find out a lot more about that raid in the future because Netanyahu says there'll be an investigation.
It
hasn't happened.
With your knowledge of the area, you've lived there, you know that area so well. What's your take?
My take is, you want to hear my take?
Here's yes.
My take.
I do.
All right. My take is, first of all, there is absolute documentation that they were forewarned. They were forewarned.
Meaning the Israeli government.
The Israeli government was forewarned. They were forewarned by women who tracked every little thing that happened to the fences around Gaza. You know, the story is if a butterfly landed on a sensitive piece of equipment, they'd know about it, right? So it was a woman who warned them that something was happening very soon. So that was an immediate warning. But there was also a warning a year before. And they knew the plan, and it was what Hamas did was very similar to what was the plan that was known a year ago. So then, it's a much vaunted, Israel's much vaunted security, right? Mm-hmm. So how were they able to go through all these different points on the fence, and the Israelis knew about it? Well, my feeling is that Netanyahu let it happen because then he's got the perfect pretext to do the, shall I call it, the final solution? I'll call it the final attack on the Palestinians because he was behind two previous attacks, which are in my book. And one was in 2009.
Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
I found a quote from a general who said that the Palestinians must not get access to the abundant natural gas and oil that was found off the coast of Gaza and Israel. The first finding was in 2000, and then there was a much bigger one in 2010. And I have the maps in the book. And then I have the quote from the general who says there was an area called the Gaza Marine, and the British had come in. I think it was, British Gas. It wasn't BP, but a big British company had come in and explored the area and found there was massive natural gas there.
And this is actually part of Gaza.
Yeah, yeah. It was
so it's Palestinian territory.
Absolutely. It was called the Gaza Marine. So Likud, which included Netanyahu, had decided...
The Likud party in Israel.
Yeah, the right-wing party, had decided that Palestinians should not get any of that. They shouldn't get the proceeds. When it was first discovered, Arafat was still around, and he was saying, oh, thank God, we finally have an opportunity to be economically independent. This is like a gift from Allah, you know. Well, the Israelis were not going to let that happen. And so they invaded. They invaded, and I have quotes from them saying that the proceeds they felt were not going to trickle down to help the Palestinian people. It was just going to feed more terrorism. That was the angle, and that was the reason for the onslaught. And 1,000 people, I think, were killed. I haven't gotten
the
exact
quote.
You may have it right there.
I think it was. That's Hariri. I do have it in here.
I should have had it in my notes, but the general just said, you know, they said we're going to wipe them out. That was the whole point. We're going to flatten Gaza. That's what he said. They did not succeed. You know, and then there was another one in 2014, the same thing. And to this day, the Palestinians do not have right to that natural gas that's off their coast. And meanwhile, there's been a lot more surveying of this whole massive deposits of oil and natural gas. And it's been determined, are you ready for this? It's worth $500 billion,
yeah.
Right? Now, what's the end game? What's Netanyahu's goal?
Follow the money.
It's follow the pipeline.
What I mean, follow the money to find his goal.
Well, the whole point is to create an energy. He always wanted an energy corridor going right up the Eastern Mediterranean, and that meant from Gaza through Israel, through Lebanon, which is now in shatters, through Syria, which is greatly weakened, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh.
That's happened in the last 10, 15 years. All right. You build these pipelines, and they're going to supply natural gas to Europe, which desperately needs it now because of the war in Ukraine. And so that unites the two wars. I call the war in Ukraine, I called it out at the very beginning. I wrote a piece that said it could be the mother of all energy wars, which it is. This is a war ultimately between the U.S. and Russia over particularly the eastern region of Ukraine. Ukraine, by the way, and I'm going on a tangent, but just...
That's okay, you're
really,
good. The eastern region of Ukraine, because that's where the pipeline would go through, correct?
No, I don't know about a pipeline. There was discussion about running a pipeline through Ukraine that would carry Caspian Sea oil. This was earlier.
Yeah.
It never happened. And instead a pipeline was run... into Turkey and under the Black Sea. That's all in my
So is the Ukraine pipeline a dead deal? They're not.
I haven't followed up on that. This much I know. First of all, Ukraine has the largest amount of untapped natural gas and oil in Europe, second most, next to Russia, if you consider Russia part of Europe.
Yeah.
And the richest deposits are in the Donbas region, which is where all the fighting is. All this fighting is going on in Donbas. All right. So I don't know if they've gotten to plan it yet. Good thing you asked, because I haven't updated my research.
Homework.
Are there, but they did. Oh, the other thing about a pipeline, just since we're talking about. This would have been running a pipeline from the Caspian Sea. And if you look on the map, they're all very close to each other. There's Caspian Sea, the Black Sea. They're both loaded with oil and gas, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And so the decision was made to run a pipeline from the eastern part of the Caspian Sea through Turkmenistan, through Afghanistan, Pakistan and India. That's the TAPI pipeline, and that was the reason for the invasion of Afghanistan. I have a quote from a State Department official who said, the purpose of this war is, the main purpose, was, quote, so the energy can flow south.
Is he on a record?
Oh, yeah, he's on record.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. That's in the book. Everything I put in my book, I carefully document. Why? Because otherwise I'm going to be attacked.
And I noticed, so many pages of references.
Lots of footnotes.
Yeah.
That's what a serious investigator does. You don't leave yourself open to attack. And so far, my research has not been attacked. But the TAPI pipeline was the reason for the war in Afghanistan.
And TAPI is Trans-Arabian?
No. Turkmenistan, Afghanistan, okay. Pakistan, India. And it has not been completed. And the reason it hasn't been completed is because of all the fighting and unrest. They thought they were going to control the whole area. And they didn't. They did not succeed. And they are coming back to Gaza. No bank, no financial institution will back a major infrastructure project such as pipelines if there's unrest in the region. So how do you get rid of unrest in the region? Well, Netanyahu's plan is just friggin' wipe them out. Just kill them all. and move them out of the area. Then you've got your friggin' energy corridor. Yeah. Isn't that disgusting?
Yeah.
So in a way, what I'm trying to do with my book is to take the focus off the peoples who are fighting each other, who are suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at the real culprits, and the real culprits are the energy company. And they've been doing this for decades.
Yeah, when you said the Afghanistan war was about oil.
Yeah.
What's your opinion anyway, or from the research you've done, the connection of the 9/11 attacks to moving on to the Afghanistan war? Like, have you ever gone there?
I sure have. I have gone there. I admit to going there.
Yeah.
In fact,
because I don't remember reading, but
it is in there. What I talk about is I talk about Iraq a lot,
mm-hmm.
and the whole plan was to invade Iraq, and Cheney, Wolfowitz, they were all maneuvering to do that, and they succeeded. You know, after 9/11. In fact, Iraq was on the agenda before anyone thought, you know, we're supposed to go after the terrorists in Afghanistan. What's Iraq? They planned to go into Iraq before 9/11, and they succeeded after 9/11. And
I think Iraq's a little more obvious. Afghanistan is a little more shrouded. The real reasons why, because there was a connection to 9/11. Iraq had no connection at all, so people still think we had to
Get rid of the terrorists that bombed the towers. Well, true confessions, because of my work, I was eventually asked to join Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry.
Oh, really?
Yes, and so you should check it out. These are very serious people,
uh-huh.
And they're patriots, in my view. I mean, you want to talk about a third rail? this is a third rail, yeah. It's like, you're not supposed to criticize Israel, and you're not supposed to criticize or even probe the major terrorist event that ever happened in the United States.
Are you're a conspiracy
theorist.
Are we
not supposed to look into the causes of that? Are we supposed to accept the explanations? I mean... I smelled a rat the minute it happened, and I ended up interviewing some of the women, the Jersey girls, as they're called, who also smelled a rat and have wanted, a full accounting of 9/11.
And are they the family members of victims?
Yeah, and of course I felt a certain connection, you know. I lost my father in a sabotage, in my view, plane crash. Mm-hmm. They lost their family members in 9/11, and they've never gotten a straight answer about what that causes. But if you go on that website, you'll learn a lot, I guarantee.
And what's the website again?
If you Google Lawyers for 9/11 Inquiry,
it'll come up.
Find it. It has an abbreviation, but just Google it, and you can find it.
That's interesting. I never heard of it.
Yeah. So... And I found it quite appalling that Netanyahu calls the October 7th attack Israel's 9/11. He's got a gall to say that, because in my view, he let it happen.
Well, actually, he might be right.
Well, he might be right.
Think about it.
Yeah, you're right. He might be right. Exactly. And guess what? I mean, he was in touch with... The man who controlled the Twin Towers, the Silverstein, he had leased them recently, and we know that there was communication right before that happened. And one could go on and on about that. But as I say, check the website. One of the things that I'm doing in that case, which I think is more palatable for people, is looking at how the toxic waste that was created has created horrendous diseases for people.
We had a friend who died and worked there. And,
it's awful.
Stomach cancer just out of nowhere.
Yeah,
But it wasn't that.
This is a very, very atrocious, sad story as well. So.
Yeah, it is. It is. In fact, we even have a piece of the World Trade Center that he gave us.
Because he was.
Yeah.
Oh,
Yeah, it's sad, though. You know, and there's no investigation. Nothing. There's no proof that,
well,
you know,
his... I'm working with a client who developed COPD and tried to get disability, and he couldn't get all of his medical records. And because he couldn't get all of his medical records, he couldn't present a good case for him to get disability. So he had no disability. And I started thinking, wow, is he the only one who couldn't get all of his medical records? And why couldn't he get them? And what records were hidden from him? And I guarantee you that I'll say it right out. There was nanothermite found in the dust. That's an explosive material. What does that lead you to think?
An explosive material that would have had to have been planted,
yes,
in the building.
Correct. So, I will say it out front.
Yeah.
Our group has evidence that the towers were brought down by controlled demolition.
So what do you do with that evidence then? What?
Well, what we've been trying to do is to get it to a jury.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, you know, talk about two tiers of justice.
Yeah.
It's really rough. And
I bet.
We've done FOIAs and we've done lawsuits. And, you know, you have the right, if you know a serious crime has happened, you have the right to take it to a jury.
Mm-hmm.
You have to go either through the prosecutor or you can go through a judge. Now, they turn out to be the gatekeepers because prosecutors have discretion to choose what cases to pursue and what ones not to pursue.
Yeah.
And we've gone the full length of trying to get our information to a jury, and they've blocked us.
The judges?
The courts. The courts. We took it to the Southern District of New York and pursued it, and they prevented us.
Why? Why do they?
They said that our plaintiffs didn't have standing. They weren't sufficiently affected by the
incident.
Yeah, the incident. I mean, absolutely bogus reasons.
What difference would that make if you have evidence?
What do you do about it? Or?
No, how is that a justification for denying you the trial?
Well, they can come up with a technical explanation, and that's what they did.
I see.
I mean,
so
you have just to have standing to bring your case, and they came up with this bogus thing that these people who lost family members don't have standing to bring a case.
Well, I guess you would have had to have been one of the dead people to have standing.
Oh,
you know, you would have had to have gotten killed.
So talk about, on the one hand, like, oh, isn't it wonderful? Our system is working because Hunter Biden got prosecuted, you know.
It's just,
that does not touch. When you
and Trump. I mean, it's all such a joke.
Very powerful. That's when you learn there really is a two-tier system, and your chances of getting justice are slim. I first learned that when my husband and I sued DuPont Company and the publisher of his book, Prentice Hall, for suppressing his book. And that's when I found out that it's really a tough haul.
Yeah.
And the one thing, and I'm going way off on a tangent here, but the one
that's
thing
okay.
I learned, we both learned, is there's a process in the publishing industry. If you're taking on a major expose and for some reason you find out it's going to be problematic, maybe it's because it's not well sourced, or maybe it's because somebody doesn't like you doing it and is interfering. And that's what happened with his fantastic book, DuPont, DuPont Dynasty Behind the Nylon Curtain. That's what happened. DuPont interfered with his publisher. They went to Book of the Month Club and said, this book is scurrilous and actionable.
Well, the same thing happened with RFK Jr.'s book about Fauci.
No kidding.
The real Anthony Fauci.
Right.
I mean, maybe not the exact same thing, but try and find it.
Well, that's interesting because there's a word for it, privishing. That's what we described. I went around to all these different publishing companies that had published books on corporations,
yeah.
And I finally found an editor who said, yeah, that happens. You know, yeah. The big guys interfere. They kill the book. The word is privishing, and how it privishing means to publish it privately, so it syncs without a trace. So they go through their contractual obligation to publish a book, mm-hmm. but then they yank the promotion.
APR.
Yeah, and they won't put you on the tour. And if you have no promotion, your book dies.
Right.
Privishing. So yeah. Anyway, coming back to unfair two-tier justice system, yeah, that's real.
Wow. I'm talking to... Charlotte Dinette, and she has written, her most recent book is Follow the Pipelines, Uncovering the Mystery of a Lost Spy, which is her father, and The Deadly Politics of the Great Game for Oil. And we have gone off on a few tangents here,
my fault.
Yeah, but you know, in a way, isn't it all connected?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, so it's, so, yeah.
It's all connected because you've got to go to the top.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things we learned in our book. But it was about the genocide of Indians, by the way. That was our major investigation, 100,000.
American Indians or South American?
100,000 indigenous peoples had died in the 60s and 70s in the Amazon.
Oh, right.
And we went in there to see who was responsible and to investigate this missionary, evangelical missionary organization that was, you know, that was working with the Indians and turning a blind eye.
So your original, what prompted you, had nothing to do with the CIA or...
No, we were just seeing who was responsible.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's all we were doing. And it was at this time, by the way, this is in the mid-70s, that books began to come out about the CIA. Mm. And AG's book and... what is the other one? The CIA and the Cult of Intelligence. So this was blowing our mind. And meanwhile, I'm thinking about my father. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking, like, you know, when I have some free time, I'm going to look into my father as well and see what he was up to.
Yeah.
But you asked me what I think of the CIA. Here's the thing.
I did.
Yeah, I'll come back.
I was just going to cycle back to that.
Yeah, I can come back. So here I am walking in the halls of Langley with all these CIA people. And there are young people there, young women are escorting us around and listening to the ceremony. And I came away with this impression, which of course they probably wanted me to get this impression. But, you know, first of all, every country in the world has to have an intelligence. I mean, there's just no way you can get around it. You gotta have your spies, you know.
Yeah, I know you talk a lot about that in the book, the different agencies.
Right.
You know.
And the thing is, I think a lot of these people are imbued with this mission, you know. They believe that they are saving the world for democracy. They really believe it. And they believe that they're helping American interests. I mean, they have to believe that. If they don't believe it, then it gets really sinister. And, of course, I suppose the higher up you go, you know, they can probably get pretty sinister. I would wager this. I don't think they like the idea that they're there to do the work of the oil companies. I don't think they would like that one little bit.
Yeah.
And I had developed a good relationship with the assistant director who greatly admires my father and has told me so. He told me he had a picture of my father on his desk.
Because
he had discovered him. Now, why? Because my father had studied the history of the region. He was like this Harvard graduate who began studying European history, and then he got into history, Middle Eastern history, and he went over to American University Beirut in the 30s, and all of his students were all from the area, and he learned so much about them. And so that's why he became cultural attaché 10 years later, you know, because he knew their culture, he spoke their language, he read the Quran.
Very helpful.
And the whole idea, I think, and why this man, you know, liked my father is because he understood the people. And he really wanted to do the best for them while advancing American interests.
Yeah.
And sadly enough, it never quite goes that way.
Yeah, plus this book, I guess, points to the British as the culprit and not the American CIA.
Well, I don't think... I don't think that, actually, a person who was very, my father's best friend, who was very much tied in with the British, apparently told his daughter, because I contacted his daughter, first of all, he was very, very upset that my father had been killed. And he wrote about it in his book. But he said he was killed by one of his own. Now, what's one of his own? Does he mean a Westerner? Does he mean British? Does he possibly mean American? I have not fully explored that angle. I know that there was disagreement on the terminal point of the pipeline.
And a disagreement?
Inside.
Okay, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah, inside the State Department, inside really the oil companies. And there were some that favored Haifa, and they were probably also favoring creation of the State of Israel. You know, it hadn't been created yet. My father saw, he was one of these people, and there were a lot of them. He predicted this would turn out very badly, because it was going to be a imposition on an ethnic group of people, Arabs, of a European colony. That's what it was. And he saw it for what it was, and he called it out. I mean, he was very concerned about that. Now, a lot of people, it's said that a lot of people in the State Department were anti-Semitic, and that's why they didn't want a State of Israel. And there were a lot of anti-Semitic people in those days. I mean, it was quite rife, I have to say.
Did you see a lot of that when you were living in the Middle East? Did you...
Among Americans?
Well, just among anyone.
I actually didn't. And the Palestinians that I came to know who lived in Lebanon tried to make it very clear that they were not anti-Semitic, but they were opposed to this
their land getting stolen?
Settler state. The apartheid was not the word used at the time, but occupation was.
Yeah.
And you know, once people study the history, they'll get a far better understanding of why the Palestinians act the way they do. I mean, they have suffered, I would say they have suffered almost 80 years of oppression and occupation, and it had been covered up and is finally blown open.
That's what's so disappointing about RFK Jr.
Yeah.
I mean, someone who goes into such detail and research and... Hasn't he done that?
No, I mean, you know, they got to him. And they're very effective at that. I mean, there are other people I know, very progressive people.
Yeah.
Who, you know, they're given the tour. by the way, all new members of Congress are given the tour. and so, you know, that propaganda is inculcated. But
Tour by AIPAC.
Hey, Bernie, good for Bernie, you know?
Good for Bernie, I have to say.
No, I got to say, good for him, because that's a pretty courageous thing.
It is.
He sees it for what it is. It's genocide, you know, starving people to death.
And it helps him being Jewish, too, because
Jewish, you know. And American Jews, you know, for peace. I mean, thank God for them, that group of people.
I heard, I think Whitney Webb, it was the first I heard of it, but I had been running through my mind, too, that possibly RFK Jr. is being blackmailed.
I have heard that, and I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't either.
I mean, that may
it's just
be...
That another
may,
conspiracy theory well, that you could throw out there.
It could be, but you have to come up with some explanation.
Yeah, exactly.
For why he's saying what he has said.
Exactly.
And I asked some people, I know quite a number of people who have resigned. And yeah, that blew my mind.
Yeah,
and that was brave. And
it was just such a shocker. And I had a friend say to me, "Well, you've done a 180. You were such a supporter." And I said, "I haven't done a 180. I've been an anti-war activist my entire life." Yeah. He did a 180.
Really?
You know,
like, no, I mean, really, congratulations to you, Jerry. I mean, that's another reason I wanted to come out and meet you, make this long drive out here, because
that's so glad you did.
Yeah.
I do want to mention your book again, because I just finished it. It's really interesting, fascinating read, I think.
Thank you.
And I was wondering, too, the CIA maybe because you didn't point to them, they invited you to the ceremony.
No, you mean I didn't point to them as causing the crash.
Right. Causing your father's plane to crash.
It was one of their own that died in it. So, yeah. You know, unless there he was killed by one of them. I have not fully explored that angle. The British are still top on my list. But that's not by, what is it? I didn't do it on purpose. Let's put it. I didn't finger the CIA on purpose because my father was one of them. The reason they honored him was because they said, "Look, the CIA was formed a few months after he died, but he still got similar training, and so we considered him part of the whole thing, part of the operation." Now maybe if they hear this interview, they won't invite me back anymore. I got some real insights.
That's great.
And I hope people read the book because damn it, this book, I feel it should, given what's going on, it should be selling a lot more than it is.
I agree. I mean, there's such great information, and if you're interested, and who's not nowadays in this area and what's going on, the maps alone.
I mean, there are like
there's a multitude of maps of this area and how these pipelines are. Either, not too many of them have been constructed, though.
A lot of them have not, because there's no peace, there's unrest all over the place. But one other thing, I'll end on this thing. Netanyahu was a cheerleader behind the war in Iraq. And reason is he wanted to reopen the Iraq petroleum pipeline that terminated in Haifa. And it was built in the 30s, okay? He wanted that to be reopened. And he chose a man named Ahmed Chalabi. He said, that's the guy that should replace Saddam Hussein. And he's going to support reopening that pipeline. But the problem was, Ahmed Chalabi was the guy that had come up with the weapons of mass destruction fiction. And so he was discredited. And the pipeline still hasn't been built, but don't you think he still wants that built there? And that's when I found out he wanted an energy corridor. And I think the U.S. is behind it. I think that explains why Biden is like biding his time, hoping this war will end and there will be a ceasefire. And meanwhile, they got big plans. And you know, Kushner thinks there's going to be fantastic real estate development in the area. And then there's the whole Ben Gurion Canal too. So we still haven't covered the whole territory.
We haven't. I could talk to you once a week.
Yeah. Well, but anyway, anytime you want to pull me in on another angle.
Yeah.
Well, I think we covered a lot of territory though.
We did,
Jerry.
And I really did want to chat with you about RFK Jr. and what your opinion was.
Well, that was my opinion.
What all happened?
I'm sorry for all those people who support it, and there's a lot of people who still support him.
Yeah.
And I say to them, how can you support this man when he is turning a blind eye to genocide? How can you? It just baffles me. Some people say it's because he's so much better on all the other things.
Like what?
Well, no, I mean, I think he, you know, he comes off as very progressive and on health care and, you know, people, homelessness. I don't know. I haven't followed him carefully because I got so turned off. But I know there are a lot of people out there that support him. But
yeah, well, so I've been talking to Charlotte Dennett. Her book is Follow the Pipelines. I guess Chelsea, I'm just going to say Chelsea Green and wherever you go from there.
And the Amazon.com, unfortunately. And you can order it through any independent bookstore. You know.
Okay. Do you have a website?
Yeah, CharlotteDennett.com. And FollowThePipelines.com. I need to update it.
And the other really interesting thing, if anybody wants to pursue this, is the Lawyers for 9/11
Inquiry. Committee for 9/11 Inquiry.
If you want some details about evidence.
If you want some more information, yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for making the drive.
Oh, it's great, Jerry, sorry. Yeah,
that's okay. And Gary Jackson will be in with Weekend Warm-Up, like he always is. And there's some great music over the weekend. And thank you, everybody, for listening. And have a wonderful weekend.